Words on Water. Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. Excited to be joined by a colleague and friend for this episode. I have Cameron Davis with me. He is the newly inaugurated as Commissioner of Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. He's also a Vice President at GEI Consultants. I worked with him for many years when he served as Senior Advisor for the Great Lakes to the EPA Administrator, and he also was President and CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. So Cam, glad we could get together and do this.
Hey, Travis, this is fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really intrigued and I'm very curious about what it was like to run for an elected office for water.
Well, it was really exciting. And part of what made it exciting is I got to go out and meet voters and start every sentence with, hey, there's a really important vote for your water coming up. I didn't have to start with my name and who I was, because once people heard your water and the way they received it was my water, all of a sudden they would pay attention right away. And it was fantastic. Unlike whether are you voting Democrat or Republican or something else, this was all about something that means a lot to everybody. And that made the job really fun.
As a communications person and someone that's worked in government and so forth, I love your intro there. That's, like you said, that gets kind of right to the point of why it's relevant, that election is and their vote is relevant to them. Very, very cool.
And what I think is really unique about this one is there are a lot of municipal water agencies around the country whose boards are appointed. And what makes the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District in the Cook County, Greater Chicago region really interesting and unique is that these positions are elected. So the voters really get to determine directly who's going to represent them on this critical issue.
Beyond that great intro that you had there, what was kind of your platform and what are your priorities now? Yes, you were going to be involved in their water, but what was your vision? What were you telling them you wanted to do for their water?
Well, there are a lot of things. One of them was making sure that we are doing everything we can on infrastructure, both green and traditional, to help with water quality. And of course, that then leads to jobs. You can't have, and I'm going to emphasize this, you cannot have in this day and age clean water without having professionals help take care of it for you. Clean water no longer just happens by itself. Another thing that's important to voters is equity. We live in an age where we're having more intense rainstorms, as you know, more storms. So being able to talk to people about how we reduce flooding and where we prioritize the reduction of flooding is incredibly important. We have disadvantaged communities here in Cook County, the second largest county in the country, that flood a lot. And so how are we steering our resources to help ensure that no community is being disproportionately affected by flooding? And that was a big deal. We need to get a lot more out of our municipal agencies in this day and age. So it's a matter of environmental quality. It's a matter of equity and fairness. And it's a matter of economic vibrancy and health, all in an age where the climate is changing and we need to be ready for the next 500 years, not just the next year.
I'm curious also, what is the role of a commissioner for MWRD? What are kind of the charges and so forth?
There's a 9-person commission, board of commissioners, and they oversee the executive director, the top staff person, and the district just hired a new executive director. His name is Brian Perkovich, and he's been at the district for a while. So I think he knows the operation pretty well. And we help oversee a budget of about $1.1, $1.2 billion per year, a staff of about 2,000 people. So it is a sizable agency. Where you and I used to work together, Travis, budget of the district is about maybe a fifth or the sixth of the budget that we had at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which of course is a federal agency. So it's a big municipal agency.
Yeah, that's incredible when you put it that way. I put it in perspective in comparison to EPA, and to hear you're looking at a fifth of that number. Well, again, congratulations on winning that election, and I'm looking forward to seeing how things go for you there, and just kind of following from afar and so forth. I know Chicago is a great water city. I know there's incredible things happening there. I know that there's a lot of a great progressive ideas, so it'll be fun to see. One of the great things about Chicago being a water city is it's located right there on the Great Lakes. And I mentioned in the intro your extensive background with the Great Lakes. Just for listeners that might not be as familiar with the Great Lakes, or especially international audiences and so forth, could you just describe kind of the Great Lakes and why they're so important and kind of how they are right now as far as their health?
Thanks for the questions too about the election. My working theory is that clean water requires a healthy democracy, and I'm trying to prove that out. The Great Lakes are the largest fresh surface water body in the world. They comprise about 20% of the planet's fresh surface water supply. And even though we think about them as five distinct lakes, they really are part of one entire holistic ecosystem. And here in our region in the upper Midwest, we're taught as kids that the Great Lakes are our homes, H-O-M-E-S, Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. Every now and then, there's a small lake wedged between Huron and Erie called Lake St. Clair, and people like to think of that as a Great Lake. But the five big Great Lakes are the homes, H-O-M-E-S. So about 20% of the planet's fresh surface water, of course, that becomes important as fresh water is more and more at a premium in the world. As we hear more about water stress and the growing population globally that has more and more challenges with accessing fresh surface water, we're extremely blessed in this country, both the U.S. and Canada, to have the Great Lakes. So any conversation about the Great Lakes almost has to start with is just how to put them in perspective globally. But I think for people, those of us who live, work, and play in the region, a lot of us think of the Great Lakes as the beach that we take our kids to in the summertime, or that park, that public park that may be on the coast, or our favorite fishing spot. In other words, for a lot of us, the Great Lakes are, we don't necessarily think of them in terms of these big, giant expanses of water. We tend to think of them in a more localized way, which is, I think, a really healthy thing. It's a good thing. The Great Lakes are one of the most magnificent treasures we have anywhere on the planet. And unless you've actually looked at them, it's just hard to fathom what they represent. I remember as a kid telling a friend of mine who lived in Florida, hey, you should come up and visit sometime. And he said, great, we'll go canoeing and paddle across Lake Michigan. I mean, unless you've got several days and a way to take care of yourself, these are like freshwater oceans. And it's just hard to really understand that until you see them and experience them.
I mean, you just gotta kind of marinate on that. 20% of the Earth's fresh water, is in those Great Lakes. That's incredible. The whole planet, 20%, right there in the Great Lakes. I mentioned your background, where you were a senior advisor at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for the Great Lakes. Also, your background with the Alliance there. What was really kind of your overarching focus? Your top priorities when it comes to protecting, restoring the Great Lakes?
For all of us who live in a home, you recognize that it doesn't just take care of you unless you take care of it back. And so our the Great Lakes and fresh water in general, and I'd even say our oceans and other ecosystems, they require investments, they require upkeep, they require maintenance. We tend to think of these ecosystems as being able to just take care of us without any kind of reciprocity, and it doesn't work that way anymore. There are too many demands on the Great Lakes and on other ecosystems for that to happen. So as a kid, going to Lake Michigan with my family and after college and then heading into law school, I came to appreciate this notion that we have a deal, we have a relationship with these lakes, where if they're going to take care of us, we have to take care of them. And it's our job to keep making that a public policy imperative. I've been around for more than 30 years in my career doing this work, and I've seen ebbs and flows where if you don't have environmental groups that are constantly pushing their message out to the public, if they're not in front of elected officials, if we don't have the science that reaffirms the importance of taking care of the lakes, they start to fall off the radar. They become an afterthought. And when that happens, you start to see stuff go wrong, like you would if you don't every now and then put new shingles on your roof, or you don't take care of that wall that is getting leaky in your home. Our ecosystems are the same way. It's this fundamental understanding that if our ecosystems are going to take care of us, we have to put the effort in to take care of them.
I think one of the interesting dynamics that you did allude to or reference is this shared border, right? We have the United States, we have Canada, that collectively together have the Great Lakes. And so I think when it comes to especially being at the federal level, I'd be interested to hear what that's like, how that cooperation and collaboration works in an international situation. Because a lot of times a water body or whatever is contained within a particular country or state, but this is so different.
Yeah, it really is. We share the Great Lakes with Canada, and it's really important to remember that. We also share the Great Lakes with probably about 40 to 50 Native American tribes around the Great Lakes too, which are sovereign nations under U.S. law. So that adds a dynamic that's not often present with other big ecosystems around the country. The relationship with Canada, between the U.S. and Canada, has, especially as the Great Lakes are concerned, has always been a very healthy, strong one. And under our 8 years, my 8 years with the Obama administration, we worked very hard to not just keep it strong, but to actually make it stronger. The U.S. EPA put a priority on the working relationship with Canada. I know our State Department did as well. A very close ally and friend of mine, Bruce Hayman, was the ambassador to Canada with the State Department, and he worked very hard to help make sure that the U.S. and Canada were not just good neighbors, but friends. And you often hear that terminology used. The U.S. and Canada coordinate very closely on improving the Great Lakes. And one of the ways that we did that is through a pact, agreements between two countries to help address water quality in a shared voluntary way. And that was something that we renewed and strengthened in 2012 for the first time in 25 years. And I thought that also speaks to the very healthy, strong relationship that the U.S. and Canada have.
Just curious, you know, as you know, I was involved in a lot of Chesapeake Bay work through EPA's office there before I went to EPA headquarters. And I know that, you know, probably the biggest challenge with Chesapeake Bay was nutrient pollution, right? Nitrogen, phosphorus. Sure. And what's the biggest environmental challenge for the Great Lakes? Is it the same?
I think there are a lot of similarities between the Chesapeake and the Great Lakes, even Puget Sound, the Gulf, and even the Everglades. They're often very similar. We do have nutrient runoff and nutrient pollution here in the Great Lakes. Toledo's drinking water system shut down one early weekend in August of 2014 because of toxic algae from runoff flowing through the Maumee River, which runs through Toledo, Ohio. We have invasive species problems Those are critters that get into the Great Lakes and disrupt the very fragile food web that we have here. We have toxic hotspots that need to be cleaned up. And I think that that's an emerging success story for the Great Lakes, where we're knocking these cleanups off one after the other off the list. Another one is habitat. We have a lot of farmland in the upper Midwest, and a lot of that farmland came to be because wetlands were converted long, long ago. But in losing those wetlands, we lost the capacity to absorb floods. We lost filters for water quality and all of the different benefits that wetlands provide. But just given the amount of farmland that we have in the upper Midwest, that's been a challenge around the Midwest as well. Climate change is another big one, of course, just like it is in so many other places around the planet. But those are just a few.
I understand. Lots of challenges. You have this great career in public service and so forth, but you're also, as I mentioned, a vice president at GEI. And so I wanted to kind of ask you a little bit about that and what you see in as the role of the private sector in, you know, anticipating and addressing the challenges of the future. I don't think it can be all the public sector. I'm sure you agree with that.
Absolutely. I agree with it 3,000,000%. The challenges are just too great, too vast. Government can't do it all alone. We as individuals can't do it all alone. We really need to make sure we're partnering with the private sector. And working for GEI consultants has been phenomenal. Just great scientists and engineers with a lot of integrity doing really good work. And my thought has been, having worked in academia, nonprofit, government, and now the private sector in the corporate world, has been, how do we marshal the coordination of all of these different sectors to help when it comes to water, with a particular emphasis on the upper Midwest? And I think we're going to see that the private sector, the corporate world, has a greater and greater role to play moving forward, not just around the Great Lakes, but all over the planet. I think, you know, one of the challenges from a communication standpoint here is, whenever you have a dialogue about the corporate world and water and infrastructure, the conversation almost automatically goes to, well, wait a minute, are we going to be privatizing our water supplies? And I think one of the warnings that I have for anybody who has this discussion is, don't jump to those conclusions right off the bat. There are lots of ways in which the private sector and the corporate world can help, in terms of making for healthy, vibrant ecosystems, because it's in their interest too, to be working in harmony with ecosystems, not working against them. So just finding really good talent with people who understand how ecosystems work, they are systems, makes a big difference. And we're going to see more and more of this because we have to. The challenges to our infrastructure are just too great for us to not have all the players and all the sectors around the table.
Yeah, I love that point you made, that don't just go right to that privatizing water discussion. That's not what it's about. There's a lot of ways that companies partner in communities and with nonprofits to advance great projects. I mean, you're familiar with so many of them. So, Cam, I'm glad we got to cross paths in our post EPA lives here, and stay in touch and keep working on water together. And I'm glad for Chicago that they've got you as part of their commission. And like I said, I look forward to following things from afar.
Thanks, Travis.
Words on Water.